boven jaren klim die berg, zo haastig en zo lastig. Boven jaren klim die berg om die boeren te verergen. Hoera voor die holy boven jaren. We moeten die heil, die, we moeten die trainen, die, die holy boven jaren. Kom weer. Oké, en dan, what it means is, there's big baboons climbing down the mountain and they're coming to raid the farmers' crops. And the baboons in South Africa are known as the mischievous little buggers. And I have three kids, and this is why they wanted me to sing it, because they're the mischievous little buggers that come into your crops and steal all your corn, and then they take off again, and you chase them down, and you never catch them.
Yeah, and they'll come back, and they'll come back.
No, that's it. They'll carry on being persistent.
Oh, that's a great tune to start off the show with. Thank you, Paul. I appreciate that, man.
You're welcome. Welcome.
Awesome. Good to finally meet.
Yeah.
And I know off mic, we were just talking about how Gary Mayers, Mayers Carpentry, is responsible for this.
Yeah, he's a good soul, that one.
Totally. He's a good, he's a great guy. I like meeting, and part of the reason why I love doing this show is I just get to meet so many amazing people. Yeah. And where they come from and how they got started and their passion and stuff like that. And you've got an interesting story and how it all started too as well. But I just want to let everybody know, we got Paul. How do you pronounce the last name again?
Lentinello.
Lentinello.
Yeah.
What's the origin of that?
It's Italian, well, Sicilian.
Yeah, that's what I
I'm a good mixed breed. Half South African, half Italian.
At what point did the Italians show up there? Or
Well, my mother apparently went on a holiday to Italy, and then they bumped into each other, and then my father moved to South Africa. He has some family from South Africa, so it was a good sort of trade-off. And then, yeah, grew up in a small little town called Paradise Beach. 400 people in the town. It was
That's
fantastic.
Tiny.
On the beach, 75 kilometers of beachfront. It was two boys, me and my friend Jody.
Wow.
That grew up in the entire town. Yeah, yeah.
And then you moved to Canada?
Moved 13? To Toronto 13 years ago. I met an incredible woman that traveled like nobody else's business. She didn't care who you were, what you were. She would be open-minded about it. And I thought, okay, well, move to Canada, see what it's like. And, yeah, sold everything I had over there, moved here, started a family, living the Canadian dream, you know. Don't stop working. Hustle. That's what it is.
We'll get into all of that. You can find Paul on IG under the_keen_woodworker. And then also his email is paullentinello@gmail.com. And that's spelled LENTINELLO. And his phone number to reach him, because we're obviously going to talk about your projects, 647-983-5670. Quick shout out, Mike and Integra Bell t-shirt I'm wearing on today's show. I also want to talk about some conversations I've been having lately on DM as they've been stockpiling, because I can't keep up with them all the time, unfortunately. And at some point, someone else is going to have to take over them and start betraying me. But at Plumbing Ontario 24 sent me a video about the UK and Europe. I believe they were talking about adopting a universal battery platform for all the tool brands. And I would just say I've been talking about this for years, how they should do that. My question is, how long is that going to take to come to North America? Where you can basically just transfer batteries from different brands, but...
The brands will be so annoyed.
I know, they're not going to like it. But the UK is actually implementing it as part of, like, they have to.
Yeah.
So they have to do these adapters and stuff like that. And then another message from @PlumbingProdigy. Sent me a nice message. It's always nice to get these little messages. You're a big inspiration of mine, Manny, and I wanted you to know that. And I hope you're doing amazing. Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Cool
totally.
Message, yeah.
And he was just checking in with me, making sure everything's all good. I appreciate that. And then I want to say that I bumped into more than a few people at the recent National Heavy Equipment Show, which I was attending there earlier this week. And I bumped into Matthew Over. Obviously, he's formerly of Turnkey Shoring. And it was nice to bump it. Like, you're walking by, all of a sudden you hear your name out of the blue, Manny. And I was, like, looking around for familiar faces. And then I bumped into Matt there, and we got talking. And I was like, your badge doesn't say Turnkey. What's going on? So he sold his business a couple of years ago, and we were catching up. And it was good to see him and talk. And he's going to come back on the show. And then I also bumped into a gentleman named Patrick, I believe his name. And he was doing a robotic welding design inventor thing that he was doing there. And then I was walking by Manny. And then I was like, okay, cool. And I got talking to him. And he goes, listen, man, I love your show. I watch it all the time. I pay attention, and I know a lot of the people that have been on the show, Jim Carrick and Joel from Simple. So it was just good that we had a little chat, and I said, reach out to me, and I'd love to get you on the show to talk about welding and robotics and what you're doing here. So it's all about trades and skills and everything. So I really appreciate that. So I just want to say hello to them. Are you looking for a sustainable and durable real wood solution to elevate your next project? Let me introduce you to the gold standard. Thermery, the world's largest and most trusted manufacturer of thermally modified wood and sauna materials. Their wood is like the superhero version of regular wood, stronger, more stable, and ready to take on whatever Mother Nature throws its way. With a wide range of thermally modified wood products from decking and cladding to sauna and statement walls, when you choose Thermory, you're not just investing in quality, you're investing in the health of our planet too. Join countless architects, designers, builders, and homeowners who have trusted Thermory to bring their vision to life. The best way to fully experience the Thermory difference is to hold the real thing in your hands. So visit their website today at www.thermoryusa.com and also find them on IG at ThermoryUSA. Looking for cutting-edge solutions for your spray foam needs? Look no further than ElastiChem Specialty Chemicals. With a remarkable track record spanning over three decades, ElastiChem stands as an industry-leading supplying contractors across Canada with top-grade closed-cell, open-cell, and specialty foam products and accessories. Experience hassle-free spraying in both summer and winter with Insulthane Extreme, Canada's groundbreaking HFO closed-cell product. Time is precious, and we know it. Optimize your efficiency and avoid downtime by choosing the best products with the best technical and customer support. Elevate your spray foam game today with Insulthane Spray Foam products by ElastiChem. Give them a try today. Visit their website at www.elastichem.com or give them a call at 1-877-787-2436. Seeking top-tier windows? Look no further. Payne's Window Manufacturing is the ultimate choice for custom builders, contractors, and homeowners. Visit www.paynes.com now to experience the pinnacle of quality and customization. Get your instant custom quote today. Elevate excellence with us. Plus, enjoy nationwide shipping across Canada and the US. Do you dread the office? Are you spending your personal time on paperwork? Join the club. The good news is there's a solution that isn't hard or overwhelming. With SyncedUp's estimating and job tracking software, you can plan for it and hit your profit goals all while cutting your estimating time by up to 90%. Do you know where your money is going? Are you sure you're even making money? SyncedUp will show you exactly where your money is going with its simple budgeting tool, revealing those cash leaks so you can take back control of your business. Do you wonder if all those payroll hours are making you money or costing you money? SyncedUp tracks your unbillable labor, helping you optimize for project efficiency and ensuring each job is profitable. At SyncedUp, they're here to help contractors thrive, not just survive. Get a budgeting consultation with a SyncedUp expert looking over your shoulder to help you optimize your company's budget for free using the link in the show notes. If you love what you see, you can use the TCL discount and get 20% off on your first 6 months. Annual plan is required. Just click on the link in the show notes to book your call with the sales team and mention the TCL podcast. Check out SyncedUp.com and at SyncedUp on IG to level up your business. Hey, architects and builders, do you want to stand out from the competition? Fraser Wood Siding has your back. Fraser Wood Siding is a leader in pre-finished wood siding. They manufacture beautiful pre-finished wood siding using only the highest quality PEFC certified Canadian softwood. Fraser Wood Siding is available in 17 profiles and unlimited colors. Supplied by the global leader in paints, Sherwin-Williams. Whether your design taste is classic, contemporary, conservative, or bold, they've got you covered. They'll gladly match the color of any paint manufacturer and send a sample on an actual piece of Fraser Wood Siding in just a few days. Visit their website at www.fraserwoodsiding.com and reach out about your upcoming projects to benefit from their industry-leading lead times. Fraser Wood Siding, get inspired. And now, let's get over to you, Paul.
Yeah.
When did the world... And by the way... I like the truck, man.
Thank you.
I won't go specifically about it, but I do like the truck. I like the color. I like everything about the truck, right?
Yeah, it's like to stick out. I like to stick out. That's what it is. What I do is, so as far as my woodworking career starts, I hustle. I do coffee trucks during the daytime. My woodworking career is the evening times. My passion.
Right out of the garage.
Right out of the garage.
Yeah.
I started this during COVID. I bought a chop saw. And I had a secondhand table that I picked up, and I started my little business at my side hustle with $100. I wanted to show my kids what you could do if you put your heart to it and your mind to it, and you sort of build a connection with what you're doing. Yeah. And my middle son, because him and I are like peas in a pot. We have the same issues we deal with, and We clash a lot, but there's so much love and there's so much affection and there's so much teaching each other, which is cool. And him specifically, I wanted to show. He has reading dyslexia and all that sort of stuff. And I wanted to show him, like, you don't need to be under that sort of pressure. And that's also when the internet, and they had to do school online and all of that. And it freaked him out.
That was difficult.
It was tough. Like, again, I'm going to talk about connection later on, but there's that whole connection with kids that they had lost.
Mm.
And
how old is he?
He is now 9 years old.
And how old are the other two?
The other two, I've got an 11-year-old daughter. Her name's Kaya. And then I've got the last one. His name's Odin, and he's mischievous as all heck. And he's 5 years old. And it's like Eli is the one in the middle. He's my little apple in the eye. They're all fantastic. But he's the little guy that, I see a spark in there, and it's great. Like Odin too, there's all our kids are fantastic. Like, I'm not picking one over the other, but there's just that little, I like that conflict and that little, you know, there's that spark that I have with Eli, which is
creative challenges.
Yeah.
And are they always hanging out by the garage when dad's?
Not always. It's more like a forceful, I will pay you to do something.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, it's more like there needs to be some sort of outcome. There needs to be some sort of reason why I have him in the shop.
Yeah.
And Odin, yes, Odin's still too young to hang out in the shop and all that sort of stuff. And Kaya's interested in it until she has to sand a thing. Then it's like, done deal. Like, this is your baby. You deal with it, Dad, type mm-hmm. thing. You know, she's a 11 turning 12-year-old preteen girl.
You got your hands full.
Oh, yeah.
Full-time working.
No,
and then woodworking and then family.
Yeah, my wife is awesome. She's the backbone to this all.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, she gives me the time. It's not gives me the time, but yeah, it is pretty much gives me the time that I need. She takes on everything else. Like, she's a full-time working lady. She's a full-time mom. She's a full-time wife. And she allows me to do what I need to do,
mm-hmm.
which is, you don't find that often. Eh?
No.
No.
Lucky, right?
Yeah, touch wood, eh?
Yeah, that's exactly it. What was the moment, Paul, that you were, because I know you said that you started the woodworking during the COVID years. COVID. But what was it, like you were sitting or, like, did something happen?
So, like, I'm a worker. I enjoy working. So during the daytime, I do the coffee trucks, right? And then everything shut down. It was a whole, I get up at 4:30 every single morning. I go to work, and then COVID hits. And you're sitting there and what are you going to do? Like, it's going crazy. And I watched a YouTube clip of some guy building this cool epoxy table.
Okay.
And charcuterie boards. You know, the whole sort of thing that you go down, that whole thing that gets you bitten into it. And I'm like, you know what? I'm doing nothing now. And let's see. I've sort of... It's a long story. So moving to Canada, I come from a background where I was very in touch and very sort of connected to life. And like I was telling you before, like it's just moving here, the first thing you see is everybody's on their headphones, everybody's like living a life, but living their life and not seeing what's happening.
Yeah, we were just talking about that. Yeah, you know.
And what I found by doing the woodworking is that I found my connection again. And that's, like, I can be creative. I can go into my workshop. Like, yes, it has its stresses when things go wrong and things don't go out the way you plan them. But my secret I've come up is I don't do too much planning.
You just let it go where it's going to go?
I let it do. I do more of the artistic side of the woodworking sort of theme. Like, I'm looking at your wall you've got over there. Like, it's very cool.
Yeah.
And it's like everything looks like with woodworking, it's very forgiving. There's ways that you can get around doing things. And it's more about how to achieve. Like, in your mind, you've made a mess up. But now how do I fix that mess up? And how do I still make it look like it was never a mess up? And I think construction in all...
It's the same way.
...is the same way.
Yeah.
Because I drive coffee trucks during the day, right? So I see it on the job sites every single day. What and you hear
from
do.
Them when they're talking to
yeah,
you.
Yeah, exactly. And it's I love what I do.
I'm impressed that you started by doing... I like that you have created some, like, I'm going to say magical patterns out of everyday patterns. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And I like that you've somehow pulled that off really well, where, I mean, like, you're starting off with the whole end grain chevron or spine, yeah, yeah, whichever side of the border you're on here.
Yeah.
Like, that as a pattern as a whole is just so pleasing to the eye. But when you just take it as an individual, it's like there's not really nothing here.
There's not
here.
Much to it, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, as a whole, it's amazing. It's yeah, beautiful, right? Yeah. And then you're creating pieces of it. And then it's like the legs that you're designing for certain tables and things like that. And you're trying to figure out, and now I get an understanding of it, where it's like you just kind of go with it. It's yeah, not you sit down and you've actually, this is how it's going to be. No, you just go with it.
It's whatever I'm feeling on the day too, like you'll see, I'll start a project and I'll start doing something. And by the end of the day, I think it's a piece of shit. And I'll like scrap it and start again. But then if I did not go down that path of finding out that it's a piece of shit,
yeah,
I would never have known. Because
yep,
on paper, the idea is cool and in your head it's cool. But when you're working with different woods and different species and it's the hard knocks, you know, you need to learn which wood does what and how it reacts to certain temperatures and blah. You can make it very cool, but in 3 months it'll crack up like a...
Yeah, and you don't want that to happen.
So it's a whole experience, and also following the grains. Like, you sit there, I spend hours. I spend stupid, like, the recent table I'm busy on, I've got 900 hours into it already. And it's just, you see things and then you try and enhance that part of the thing. So it's like, I'm not a mass production person.
No.
I'm a one-man show. Yeah. And
custom one-offs.
Yeah, that's it. And it's, yeah, it shows. Like, everything I do, like, even from a charcuterie board to a table, from a $100 piece, I put the same effort into. And it's because I enjoy it. It's because it's the place where I can get lost and just be.
You know? Is it completely, like, therapeutic for you?
Yeah.
It's 100%. Just like, if you're having possibly a bad day,
yeah, yeah,
you just enter there and you get a sense of the smell, and then all of a sudden you start trying to figure out, what do I want to do today?
And it's the actual doing, the doing. It's the, you start with a piece of raw lumber and like after a few weeks, there's something pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it just shows you that if you put your mind to it and you let your energies flow, things happen, and generally for the better. And even if you mess up, you still got from point A to point B.
Yep.
And it might have not been point B that you wanted, but it's still point B. And it's good because our everyday life, we go out, we work for money, and it's a grind. And then when I get into my shop, it's not a grind. It's like even sanding and buffing, and you just put the headphones on and you get into a zone and it's chill, you know? Don't tell my wife. I tell her it's a grind.
No, I still think it's a grind, but it's a grind with a purpose where it's like it's getting you some. It's not about achieving the final product as much as it's what's the experience process. achieving that final product, right?
Yeah.
And I'm just assuming now, well, things are now starting to become word of mouth, right? So you're getting projects where people are getting the word of what you can do, what you're able to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they start asking you, okay, well, Paul, can you do this? Can you do this for me?
Yeah, exactly. The more weird the project, the more I enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's the more, like with angles and all that, I'm not great at. But when it comes to more of the, like, I'm looking for something with some sort of bone structure in it or something to that effect. Like, I have a few very cool things coming up, which I can't mention yet.
No, don't mention it because you'll eventually see them online.
But yeah, it's just, I like to do... Like, even if you have a look at the last table I'm doing now, I've done it in sort of collaboration is the word to use, with a graffiti artist. And there was a whole stepping stone to get to this build. And it's just, everybody does the same thing, a river table with, like, epoxy, and you get, it's cool, it's very cool, but I want to take it to another level where everything that I build is a piece of art, but it's functional. You know, that's where...
That's the purpose.
Like, yeah, it's a purpose. It's very unique. There's not many people out there that really appreciate what goes into it or understands the value behind it. But there are a certain group of people that do. And that's the group that I like, you know?
Was it a challenge for you, Paul, to like getting in and going, where do I even begin? Or was there resources out there? I know that most guys will go YouTube and and they'll come across that, but there's a lot of missing holes, I guess, so to speak, in YouTube.
But that's where you find your niche, is the missing holes, is what you go out there and you see what you like and how you think it's going to affect your life and how you can express yourself. And that's more the sort of niche that I'm going for. And I don't know how to explain myself properly. So what my experience is I go into the shop. I say I find a client. You come to me, you say, I want to build this. Like, I'm looking at your table here. This is beautiful. Like, it's really cool.
Rob, Concept 13. Yeah.
Concept 13. Like, he does very good work. But for me to come up here and do the cornering that he's done, and he's done a perfect job here, like, for me and my space, I could never build something like this.
Yeah.
I'm more, I don't know how, it's...
I would suggest that you just put some hinges on it and fold it.
Yeah, exactly. That's
and
it.
Build
that's,
it
that's,
in two parts,
yeah,
right?
That's But I'm more the sort of artistic sort of flair, and that's what I dig. It's just, I don't know, if you go and you look at some of the stuff, like I would spend hours, I built a light fixture.
And I saw that, it was beautiful.
It's very, it's different.
Yeah, it's like amazing.
The idea was that building in Mississauga that does the twist.
Yep.
And then carved it out, but you spend stupid hours doing things
what
like
was
that.
What was it, you were using walnut, you were using,
yeah,
was
walnuts,
it pine? No.
There's black walnut, there's spalted maple.
Yeah.
There is Purple Heart and Paddock. And like I heard on one of your broadcasts, well, your podcast, that somebody said there wasn't much colors to use. I think it was a tile guy. That the reason why he does colors and tiling, because the wood, there's only two colors. And
I'm trying to remember exactly. Yeah, I know.
He was a younger guy. He was talking about backsplashes.
Yes. Yeah.
And like, well, you must go to some of my cutting boards and see what you can actually achieve with different species.
Yeah.
And
there's a whole variety of color.
Yeah, it's chaos.
I've walked through some of those facilities and you're seeing these species of wood and you're like, I didn't even know.
No. Right? That's the cool thing. You go to a place like Exotic Woods in Burlington.
Yeah.
And your mind is blown by what textures. And I love the feel of woods. And if you come into my shop, I don't have a lot going on, but you'll see what's there. And the first thing anybody that comes in there and has a look, they want to touch.
Of course.
It's what it is.
That's the purpose of wood.
And the reality is you can touch. Like if you go to a museum and you see the Mona Lisa, you're not allowed to touch it. You want to.
Well, these days there's some protesters that are touching, spraying it, doing whatever they can to
ridiculous.
It. It's not the real one anyway.
Yeah. But I think as far as like your table, you're looking at this, it means something
to
you.
Bring the mic closer
to
you. No, you don't have to come closer. Okay. You can bring the mic to you. Yeah, there you go.
So you look at this table, this means something to you. It's made for you, and that is unique. You're not going to IKEA to do that.
Yeah.
And that's...
And that's what I appreciate. I can see that coming off of your page. And I'd love to pass by your garage and just take a look at it, because I miss
chaotic.
Those kinds of... No, but I miss those, because I used to be that way too, to the point where it's like, okay... I'm either going to dive into this world and start doing this or I'm not going to, like, this is just going to be chaos, right? And I don't have, the schedule doesn't commit to it, but maybe when I get a little bit older, I might be able to do that. And then you'll have all those pieces of offcuts that you had saved up. And then you're like, let me do something with it. And I can only imagine you've got dozens and dozens of offcuts.
I've had to build a shed in the back of the house because it's like I paid for that and I can use that little piece.
Oh, yeah, I'm not getting rid of that.
Yeah,
I'm not burning it. I'm not throwing it out. I'm not cutting it down. No, I'm going to use it one day.
It's an awful, awful, awful thing.
But that's woodworking though, right? Did you make all the same mistakes, the classic mistakes that most people getting into woodworking make, where it's like a lot of experimenting, a lot of failures? There has to have been a lot of failures,
lots. You need to learn.
How do you handle it?
The biggest failures are machinery. That's on what to buy, what you think you will need for a long term, and what the reality of that is. It's nice to have everything face tool. Like, it's great. I love the idea.
Well, you don't need it. You don't need all of it.
But it does make life easier. But you're going to use that tool once, because something else is going to come up in you. It's going to get covered in dust. It's going to get buried under something. You know, forget that you have it. And the only thing I wish I had was more space. But one day.
Well, one day it's going to eventually happen,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
But so you don't need, like I have always said, that the skill set and the passion and the interest to create something is far more valuable than the arsenal of tools that you have.
Yeah.
You can always make something work. Doesn't matter if it's a really old tool and it's not perfect.
Yeah.
All the new tools are great, dust free.
Yeah, it's great.
Micro adjustments, all kinds of stuff like that. Those are all great things. But 100 years ago, we didn't have any of those tools.
No.
it was lots of, I follow a lot of guys that do a lot of hand carving, a lot of just like roll out the leather, you know, even the leather is beautiful and you're seeing like their knives.
They do is art.
It's just art, right? And I'm fascinated by it.
Yeah. Like talking about tools. So like I told you, I started this with $100. So my first tabletop I made was a shugibon table. So I burnt the wood.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was, I saw it, some guy in the States was showing, and so I was like, okay, I need to try this. I didn't have any clamps, but I had pieces of, what was it, emboya.
Did you wedge it?
I made clamps. I made clamps and I put wedges in, and that was my first glue up. And it's still, like the table, my wife hates it, but it's outside in
the
garden.
Why?
Because
she sees some imperfections in it?
No, it's all imperfections, but that's what's cool about it.
That's what I was about to say, yeah.
It's the way I was making, but she just hates, because it's got that fire yeast smell still. It's just all that sort of...
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, but for certain people, they don't like it. And it has a hell of a lot of texture. Like if you touch, I burnt the hell out of that piece of wood.
Were you using a torch? Just a propane torch?
Just a propane torch, okay. Yeah. It's like even, I've got one, my lava impersonation, so it's a big... maple cookie that I got, and I just burn the heck out of it and make it like into a volcano type setup. And
with that, can you still oil it to protect it so then you won't have the residue coming off of it? No.
So with the shishugibon, I burnt it to a heavy state, but then you go over with the lap wheel, like, and then you get rid of all the ash.
Okay.
Where with the lava table, I encased the whole thing in epoxy. So... yeah,
it just looks that way. It's going to stay that way, right?
Yeah.
How is it? I've never done the epoxy. I've always watched.
It has its stresses.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
It has its stresses. Yeah. It's a very cool thing, because no matter what you do, it's always going to be encased. It's always, there's a lot of guys out there that refuse to work with it. It's costly. It's like, with this last table, I've got like $8,000 spent into it already. And that's without the hours.
Wow.
And it's... yeah, you start the rabbit hole, and it's an addictive sort of thing because there is no limitation to it. But you learn a lot. And that's what I dig.
It allows you to create.
Yeah.
It totally allows you to create.
You can do crazy stuff. And it's just like your own imagination is the limitation to it, which is pretty cool. And then you still get, like, there's pieces of wood in the day nobody would have ever have used unless it was for epoxy. Like, if you don't have epoxy, that piece of wood's landing up in the fire heap, you know? And now, like, you can use janky pieces of rotten wood and make a piece of art out of it, which is, sick. Like, more of it. I heard a comment the other day, that in 100 years' time, we're going to look back at, like, why did you cut up that perfect piece of wood and add a piece of blue river going through it? And, like, yes, that has a valid question, like a valid comment, but... if you take a piece of wood that had no other option but to become either fire or made into a piece of art, I'll make it into a piece of art.
Of course. There's no reason to burn it up.
No, it's got another life.
Yeah.
That's it. It's lived for hundreds of years, and now because of our mentality, we're just going to turf it. It's the human way.
The one thing that I get a little frustrated about is that when you see skill being created by real people that do really skillful things, tables, arts, and woodworking, all kinds of stuff, and then the masses reproduce it on an economical, where it's like you see the piece and you could probably be this far away from it, right?
Yeah.
And you're looking at it going, something's off about that. And then you get closer and you realize it's a veneer.
Yeah.
And you're just like, all right, so now you get the corporations that are attached here and they're veneering all this wood. Yeah. And cutting them thin, and then they're laminating them to particle, whatever it is. Yeah, and then they're selling them as if it's a real piece of solid wood.
Yeah. And they're calling it solid wood because apparently the wood underneath the lamination is also wood. So they're not talking
It's wood
nonsense.
Fibers, it's particle, it's glue, it's whatever it is, whatever is inside there. I don't know what it is, but that's what frustrates me when I see that.
And like to me, what also matters, like I'll go around and look at other builders. Like I get along with all, that's the nice thing about the woodwork industry. We compete with each other, but we help each other like you can't believe. Like, yes, we're all going...
because you're all going to be in the bind.
Yeah.
One day you're going to be in a bind. You're going to need to reach out to somebody or speak to somebody,
that's
right?
It. And it's just like Gary. Gary introduced you to me. And it's there's no direct competition. There's what, one... I think there's 15 million people that live in Ontario. So there's a big market here. And what I found, even like I follow a lot of people from Calgary and from the States and from China, and everybody is willing to help you.
Yeah.
And it's they're busy. They have busy schedules. But everybody that I've met, even buying secondhand tools, like the people, there's nobody trying to rip you off. There's nobody. Like, it's such a cool little industry, man.
If anything, they're almost the most honest people. They'll tell you exactly
how to use it, what to do, what's
what
wrong
to watch
it.
Out for, what you might have to repair, what you might want to consider.
Yeah,
but no, it's really worth this much. I'm not gouging you. This is what and it the value of it is really what you can create from it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the way they see it.
So. Simple as that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why I go back to. I mean, the new tools are great. They're wonderful, but I almost wish that the younger woodworkers that are getting into the industry would at least experience the old ways of doing things.
It's not quick enough. It's not efficient enough.
I know, but that, okay, skill set and artistry, it's not about speed.
No, but the new generation is all about speed, about getting to point B as quick as they can without experiencing what's happening.
Well, then they need to get a wood mallet and tap on the whatever side of the brain to get
there.
See,
I'm
going to
get you revved up on this one. I knew it was the bad.
But that's what happened. And I see, I totally see it, right? But then you get the older ones and they get it right away.
Yeah.
They totally understand. Like, you just started this whole show talking about how many hours you got going on in certain projects and how much time you spend in the garage just thinking about things, right? Yeah. Versus, I agree with you, the kids are like, okay, I got to get this done in 2 hours.
Yeah.
There's no egg timer. Like, and it's not about that.
You know, the biggest thing is it's our fault, our generation, because we're the ones that have pushed this into our kids.
Mm-hmm.
We've taken away that experience. And this is also why I've done this part of my life, is to prove to my kids that if you put your heart to something, this is what you can get. And back to starting it with $100. I wasn't going to take a cent out of my pocket. And just to prove to them, like, if you work hard and if you're passionate about what you do, like, if you go into my garage, yes, I have a single car garage, but I've most probably got about $50,000 worth of tools in 3 years. Like, it's, and tools are an addiction.
I know they are.
Yeah,
you can never walk in and just buy one.
And I'm not on the new tool thing. Like, yes, I have nice bandsaws, I have nice table saws, but I'm onto like really old Stanley tools now and all that sort of stuff. Things I don't use, but I want them. And what's given me the ability to purchase them is by doing what I love doing. And I just want everybody to sort of take a step back, take the headphones off the ears, and just look around you, see what your niche is. Yeah.
I wish that there would be like park benches in the city, give the opportunity to either young or old woodworkers that want to try something, get them to build something, or just like come up with creative ways to do waste basket barriers or something like that, just to add a little bit of, like, not too long ago in Toronto, I used to remember we had all the planters, the concrete planters, and each neighborhood, someone would customly paint it a certain way that was a reflection of that neighborhood.
That's cool.
And it was very, very cool, because if you were a part of that neighborhood, you understood what those designs were all about, and it was like a little touch, a little fingerprint.
Yeah.
And I don't see much of that now in Toronto.
It's also like street art. Everybody looks at street art like it's bad tags. And
it's not. No, it's not. I love going down the alleys and going there, and taking a look at it. There's a lot of artistry attached to it.
There's a place in Amsterdam that's, I would love to have. Like, if I won the lottery next Friday, it's $70 million, so let me win it. They've got a warehouse. Like, it's a beautiful old warehouse that this artist has taken over. And he has people, graffiti artists from all around the world, and they have big, beautiful murals up. And it's just, it's like a whole getaway. You know, you go there with your family for the day and you check out this building. And they also do, like, if you have big mobile homes and stuff, like, they'll go and tag the whole side of your mobile home. And, like, it's experience. And it's who the people are, not who you want the people to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We miss that in the cities.
Yeah.
It's almost like we're not allowed to do it.
Yeah. We need to go to work, do what needs to be done.
Listen, I'm not a fan of anti-skateboard little knobs on benches. I'm not a fan of it.
No, for sure.
I don't mind skateboarders trying it out and testing it and getting their skills up. Like, I miss all that stuff. It doesn't bother me.
They want
me.
You to get onto Xbox, and it's the easier way. Like,
I encourage more creativity.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what form it is or what level it is, whether it's in woodworking or construction or whatever your industry is, or if it's a passion of yours, I encourage it totally at any age.
I'm at the same sort of wavelength.
Yeah. I think that's important, and I think we're missing it.
Like, education is super important.
It's a different type of education.
Yeah, exactly. That's the way. Like, I studied law for 2.5 years and thought, to heck with that. And I climbed on a yacht and sailed around the world instead. And it's the same with my kids. Like, I look at them and the pressures in school are pretty intense.
So, is there... Just pull it closer to you. Yeah, we don't want to lose that.
So the pressures at school are pretty intense. Like, everybody's social media. Like, yeah, I use Instagram. Like, I only got Instagram when I started doing this.
Yeah.
And...
But you were doing it for the networking.
Yeah, with the networking involved. And I also met a guy called Fernando from Manpower Demolition. And he's sort of like, listen, this is the route you need to take. And he's, boy, that guy, like, he puts out good energy all the time. And I wish that sort of energy would be in the schooling system as far as teaching kids. Like, I agree with the schooling system. I agree that there needs to be things done, but there needs to be some sort of, like, when I went to school, there was woodworking classes. There was after-school sports. It was always mandatory. Like, it seems like our kids go to school while you work now, and then you have to pick them up at 3 o'clock, and like, they're not learning.
Well, there's nothing. In my opinion, there's no creative outlet.
Yeah, there is nothing. Like, even music class, half an hour a week, it just makes no sense.
Music class is still there, though, right?
Yeah, it's still there.
But woodworking is pretty much gone.
No, gone. It's like, even like art classes, they do it once in a blue moon, and like, it's just, everything's computer.
Not everybody's designed to be in a cubicle. Not everybody's designed to be in an office environment.
Yeah.
There are lots of creative, artistic people out there that just need a spring. You know what I mean?
They just need an outlet.
Yeah.
And that's why that place in Holland just blows my mind, because they have another area where kids can go with spray cans and just be chaotic. There's no limit to it, and then they'll repaint the whole surface every week so that the next group comes in and they just go and tag the heck out of it. And
I may have mentioned this before on the show, probably way, way long time ago. On my first house that I built, we were just about to start putting all the hardwood flooring down.
Yeah.
But I had a graffiti artist come in and tag my business name on the subfloor before we covered it up with the hardwood. Cool. Yeah. They never told the clients. They never saw that I did it or whatever, right? I did a post about it. They never questioned me about it because it could have looked like it was Photoshop. But for me to look at it and look at that floor right in the foyer, right in the front, underneath there, there's like a 12-foot tag of a graffiti-style name of my company at the time. And I was like,
yeah,
because I wanted it there. And I gave this kid who I was introduced to, an artist.
It's your piece. It's your first house. It's your piece.
Like, it's what's the big deal? Like, we're spray painting on job sites all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Why can't we creatively spray paint?
You know what I mean? And it's always that gem. It's always going to be, it's about memories. That's what it's all about.
Maybe 100 years from now, whatever, someone's ripping the floor up and they go, what's this about?
This about? They're going to look it up and see what
gone.
You did. Yeah,
I'm gone at that point. This show will be still hanging out, so maybe they know about it. Now they discovered it. But yeah, no, I'm in agreement with you. Like, that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
And I think woodworking is almost a natural progression for a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah, because you can express yourself pretty boldly. And so what if nobody else likes it? You're the one that matters at the end. And like, I am fortunate I don't do it for a living. I do it as an extension.
Not yet. So
not yet.
Yeah.
But my coffee trucking is what's...
Yeah.
Yeah. So I am at the point where I can express myself and express what I do. And that's why I build the things I do, is because either you like what I do or you don't. And that's like, I'm not put on a block and a deadline and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, I have clients. I have made pieces that needed to have a deadline, but... Majority of what I do is I build something and then it goes up for sale. That's the sort of thing.
Is it hard to let go? Sometimes, right?
There's certain pieces that I won't let go. Like the first piece that got me going was it was a staggered chevron.
Yeah.
And then it's got a lot of angles and it's a coffee table, but it's got squares and there's lots of like slats. And I had to do like special joinery, and I can't let that go. It's in storage. I did put it up for sale in the beginning, but I couldn't let it go. So one day
was somebody interested?
Yeah. No, they wanted to give me the money too, and I at that time it was my most expensive thing I had built. It was one of my first decent things I had built, and like they were willing to pay me $3,500, and at that time it was a lot of money. You know, like for a coffee table, it was
Yeah, it was a good amount, but there was a lot of work involved there. Man. Do you remember how many hours?
Oh, it was forever. Because it was the first time I was doing joinery like that. So it took me weeks just to figure out how to do the joinery, and a lot of YouTube and a lot of sort of figuring things out. And then I had to do that 380 times. You know, it was one of those pieces that, I couldn't give it up. There's no money that will take it, and it might come up on my channel sooner enough because I went into the storage compartment. There's a bit of water damage on it, so...
So you had to repair it?
Now I'm going to have to repair it, but I might add a different flair to it now. Yeah. Seeing that I'm doing a lot of epoxy.
Maybe
stuff.
That's why you didn't sell it yet, because it's still not finished.
Yeah, yeah.
That could be a possibility. Yeah,
yeah. And that's the cool thing about woodworking is that it's never finished.
No.
Like even a table like this, it gets worn, you just redo it and it brings out something different.
So it is. I mean, that's how I like it. It made sense. And it's funny that you brought this up. It's just because when I thought about this room, I thought about exactly the size that I wanted to do it. And then I had a conversation with Rob about it and we talked about it. And then he came up with the ideas of the corners there with the engraving of the logo. And then I always had this idea about the glass insert and what I was going to put inside there. So it makes sense. It's a reflection of me.
Yeah.
That's as simple as that, right?
Yeah, it's super cool. Like no one else will ever have something like this.
Yeah. It's a one-off. Maybe it'll get sold one day. I don't know. But
why, though? That's it.
Because, like I said, I can't move it out of here. For now, but it can.
I'll help you. I got a truck.
It's the glass. The glass was nerve-wracking because it had to be tempered.
I mean, can you imagine laying it down properly? You have those little sucker things.
One day we'll see, but we're not there yet. But, I see what he's saying. I'm always envious of you guys that actually start the garage workshops because it's like they're so valuable.
I was lucky enough to have the garage to start with. Yeah. So that's the main thing. And then it was just, again, having a wife that sort of understood that you needed outlets. And
is she slipping you little notes about ideas that...
No, I'm just really, like, with her, we have a great relationship. We chat a lot. We wear our emotions on our shoulders. And if we feel shit, we feel shit. Everybody can see it. If we feel great, we feel great. Everybody can see it. And we don't change... Communication is huge. So touch wood, it will stay that way for many years to come. I'm just very lucky in the way that she's very supportive and motivates me and just keeps things grounded, you know? Otherwise, I would be still traveling, you know?
Well, you'd be traveling and wondering what to do, but now you're finding lots of what to do's, right?
Yeah, it's a different part of my life because before I moved to Canada, I traveled. That was what I did, and I used to do crazy stuff, man. Like overlanding through Africa and doing crazy adventures and Indonesia for many years and all kinds of crazy stuff. And then there was always that looking for the connection. Mm. You know? It wasn't about... who I was going to hook up with or, you know, it's backpacking boys. We were naughty buggers, but it was more about, again, the connection.
Yeah.
Finding a spot that not many people have been to and just being, you know. And I don't have that travel ability now because I have three kids in it, but my just being is creating cool things. And
you'd be surprised. Yeah. I know some people that have, they've got two kids, and they purposely travel. They're like, no, we're going. We're taking them with us. We don't care. We'll manage somehow. We'll figure it out. Yeah. And they just like, we have to go. And they still did it through the pandemic years. And they were like, just fought on it. And I think, and I was like, this is amazing because just the experience that the kids are having by going through this, right?
Like, just meeting different cultures.
Yeah.
And just seeing
it's just going to be going to be a sponge absorbing all this stuff. And then it's a lot better than just being closed in one part of a city, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's Toronto or another city, it's just more challenging at that point.
But it's crazy. You grow up in Toronto. Like I look at my kids and we live in a very nice area, but you don't know what's happening at Weston and Lawrence. You don't know what's happening in Scarborough. We're very all open-minded in the city. We all get along, but we don't mixed communities, right? It blows my mind.
Nobody wants to talk to each other anymore.
We're afraid of it.
We're
afraid of what they might think, or if they might think we're saying racist things, or you have to be so careful. And that's what I love about the construction industries. We we've sort of lost that filter. We can tell you to go
we're
fuck
not
yourself,
like that.
Or you
yeah,
can
we're
tell
not
you
like
give
that.
You a big hug without feeling you're gonna get a sexual assault. Or
you know, the one thing that Paul that I noticed recently, and it drives me crazy, and I just do it as a test sometimes, is that I'll see a park bench, someone is sitting there. I'll sit on the other end of the park bench. That person will leave.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if you try and talk to them.
Or if you look in their direction and yeah. they're kind of sensing you want to just say hello, how are you? Yeah, like, yeah. It's not that you're hitting on anybody.
No, we
you're
must
just
take these things out. I can say hello to you like this. It's so much easier.
But I find it like that's just ridiculous. Like, and when you do travel, and I love traveling too, it's like you could say hello to complete strangers halfway around the world and they'll say hello back to you.
Participate, yeah. And they'll be interested.
They'll hear an accent or they'll try to figure where you're.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not American. Well, I'm Canadian, right? Well, I'm not Canadian.
But that's the same thing, though.
That's
how
it is. I know.
North America's.
I say I'm Portuguese. That's what I say, right?
It's funny. When before I moved, I thought it's all one thing, you know? They all speak the same. One eats maple syrup, the other one doesn't.
Well, we do make good maple syrup when you get it from an actual, you know, sugar shack, right? One that's processed to death or whatever.
Yeah, we go to a spot up in Woodbridge. I forget the sanctuary's name, but they every year they have that sugar shack going. And
such a nice smell.
Cool. Yeah.
The problem is that if it's all run by men, there's alcohol there. All
that's
the time.
Not
that's not a problem. I know it's not a problem, but I'm just you don't even taste it. That's the problem. This tastes really good.
It's like the first time I went ice fishing. I'm like, this is crazy. Walking on a lake, like. But then you get into the shack and you see why they're doing it. It's firstly they're all running away from their families, and they can go there and they can get hammered and catch fish and talk nonsense. It was like,
it's like alcohol and IV or something like that.
Yeah.
You're just sitting there. It's keeping you warm.
Yeah,
totally
exactly.
fine. And occasionally you get a little bell, and the fish is going to bite.
It's bizarre.
It is weird, man.
Who lives in the country where lakes freeze? Who lives in the country where lakes freeze up?
It's Canada.
I know.
I don't do it. Like, I don't understand it. I've gone fishing a couple of times. I'm not a fan of it.
I've been once and it was enough for
me. I'm like, this is not like I did my share of throwing up, right? Because the swells were 20 feet and I get it, but I'll go to the shop and I'll choose the fish.
And what's your background?
Portuguese. I know.
You don't go fishing.
When I'm there.
Oh, your ancestors are coming off.
I have
you,
no problem. No, I know, but I have no problem being on the wooden boats there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then just traveling through the ocean to get to the other island. I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
It was getting here on the West Coast and doing a whole fishing trip thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then just them telling us we had 20-foot swells today. And I was like, well, what the fuck is that? I don't understand what that is. And then you get out there and they're like, don't look at the horizon. And I was like, what do you mean? Yeah. Well, what do? You look at the horizon and you're just fixated on this.
Green
and I'm
on
like,
the gills.
Oh, God, I'm not feeling well.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But
everybody goes through it. It takes a little while. So I grew up in a small village, and it was predominantly a fishing village. So you growing up, you have to like go through the surf to get out.
Of
and
course.
The swells get awful. It gets, oh, man, it's terrible. It's. But you get used to it, and it builds character, and you don't get much of that around. Yeah,
there isn't a lot of going through what I call the bumps and bruises in life anymore.
Yeah, that's it.
Everyone's almost
it's very protected.
Bubble wrapped, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, like, did you not? I don't know if you have, but I've jumped off garages.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? I totally, you're at the top of the garage. You're like, that looks like about 5 feet or so. And like, you have no sense of what measurement is about at that age. And you just jump and you're like, why am I still in the air?
Yeah.
I should have already touched ground by now. But
the funny thing is you didn't break much bones.
Bumps
and
bruises.
Do you think I'd let my kids do that now? No. Bubble wrap. That's exactly what you said.
Well, the thing is, you know, and I don't have children, but I would do it. And if they did have a bump on a bruise, I would just take a joke that I heard when I was a kid where it's like, listen, you're Superman. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You'll heal. No problem. And what else? Superman will never tell mommy. Okay? So don't tell mommy.
I like that one.
So Superman doesn't tell mommy, right?
It's like the same thing. Me and my son, Eli, we started mountain biking. And he last year had an awful wipeout. Like bad. He fell down the hill.
Did he go over there?
Oh, no. So we going down Don Valley next to the train tracks.
Yeah.
And it was a big washout.
Yeah.
And it must have been maybe three stories down. And it was the first time I let him lead, because normally he's behind me on his bicycle and he's leading. And I say, carry on riding, because I saw it was coming up. Don't look, carry on riding. And Stu's Bob, he looks and he sees the washout. And he freaks out. He puts on his brakes, but then he's in the washout and he's got no place to put his feet. So he falls and he's going down this hill, but he's got all the gear on. And I see this. I dive off my bike after him. The poor kid. He comes down the hill and lands on a tree trunk. His bicycle lands on top of him, and then I land on top of the bicycle. But yeah, it was that whole, like, there was tears initially, but we stood up and, look what you just did. Look up there. Look at what we just came through. And you got a couple of scrapes and screws, but can you imagine what you can tell your friends at school, what you did on Saturday? Like, my dad landed on top of me coming down the hill. And it changed the whole sort of, instead of running home and crying about it, it changed the gearing.
Yeah.
Like, that was an adventure. And yeah. It's
just don't tell mommy.
Yeah, don't tell mommy. That's the biggest thing. Oh, yeah.
No, like, I do miss that. I don't hear, when I speak to the people that I do know that have kids, I don't hear about these bumps and bruises happening on their kids anymore.
No, you're not allowed to. Serious will be at your house.
How old were you when you had your first car accident?
Oh, I was 13.
I was, I think it was the first year of driving here, so it would have been 16, right?
Yeah, I stole my dad's car out of his driveway. And
I borrowed it. You can use the word stole, borrow it.
Yeah, yeah. And I drove off a lagoon bridge. So I lived in a place.
What were you driving?
It was an old like 1960s Beetle.
Okay.
And I was going to go visit a buddy, and my dad taught us to drive from a young age because we grew up in the middle of nowhere. And I took it out, and there was a deer on the causeway, and I swerved out of it, but I was driving miles too fast, and I didn't know what I was doing, and I swerved off on the causeway, and I landed in the lake next to the causeway, and yeah. And back then, they were allowed to beat us.
No, I know. Yeah. I know that.
I never stole another vehicle from my father again.
That's the worst part is that you already have bruises that hurt, and now you're going to get beats, and then they just get like
and
compounded.
And the worst part is walking home and telling him we need to go
trying to
fish
figure out
this.
The story.
Oh, yeah. Like, firstly, what are you doing in the car? Like,
You're figuring out the beginning, the middle, the end of the story the least amount of pain associated with that story.
But you know it's going to be painful.
Oh, it's still going to be bad. It doesn't matter. It's still going to be bad.
There's no return.
Yeah.
And the worst part was like seeing the disappointment on the face, you know, like, oh, I can't believe you did that. You know, it's like, yeah, life. It's good. I enjoy it. I enjoy the journey. Yeah.
Is there any, what other challenges are you looking at with woodworking? Has anybody pushed you?
My biggest challenge is getting noticed. That's the biggest. Finding the right clients, putting it like that. Like, yeah, I have a decent enough following on Instagram, and the more thing is actually getting eyes on the stuff I make. Like, I was speaking to some people this week about maybe taking it to, there's a few things I have that I wouldn't mind taking to the Lux show, so that might happen.
Oh, the show next week.
Yeah, the
I'm
show
gonna
next
be there
week.
As well. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I got invited there.
Maybe we'll see it, because my advertising, I work daytime, I work nighttime, so my advertising on what I do is not great.
Yeah,
but other than that, yeah, there's nothing.
What about Facebook groups? Because I'm hearing a lot of people get some success out of Facebook groups.
Facebook. I even had to give her the phone to share.
No, that's normal.
I'm useless at all these things. Yeah. Like, I'm a hands-on doing kind of person. Technology scares me. It's the same with CNCs. I bought a CNC. I tried it for a few weeks and I got rid of it because I got so intimidated by the programming of it and all that. So
you need to go up to Gary's shop and have a conversation with him and have an espresso and maybe a little bit of alcohol.
Yeah.
And then he'll give you a little tutorial on his, right? Yeah. He's figured it out completely, and he's not all that tech savvy as well either, right?
So daunting.
No, I know, I'm in the same boat too. It just gets frustrated, right? But
yeah, it's the time, and you know, it's like, what would you rather be spending your time on? Learning a machine or doing something that doesn't frustrate you? Yeah.
Everybody's got their secrets, Paul. I'm just curious about if you want to share your, what's your favorite glues that you use, favorite oils that you use?
So I'm a tight bond kind of glue guy.
Okay.
I like the product.
Which one? 1, 2, 3?
All of them.
All of them.
Yeah. Depending on what. Depend on what I'm making. Like Type 1, 3 and everything that's going to get a bit of water, sort of like cutting boards and all that sort of stuff. Oils, I really love Grand Finishes. They, like a company, I think it's in Guelph, I think okay. it is.
All right.
They make really good sort of like their beeswax and everything. Like I used to use Osmo in the beginning because everybody does. And your garage is contaminated for the entire time. There's no way you can be in that garage while you're working because of the fumes that come out of the Osmo. It's got a very strong, it'll give you a headache, 100%. Wow. Where if you use Grand Finishes, like everything is natural. And they've got like a, what's that stuff that you use to get rid of mosquitoes? Like a, the smell that's like a.
Camp? Oh, is it? It starts with a C?
Yeah, it's got a sherbet.
You know what it is? Is it chamomile? Yeah.
But it's got like that lemony grass sort of smell.
Okay, yeah.
And it works fantastic. Like, it's just really a good product. I enjoy it. And then if the like Rubio, all that sort of stuff mm-hmm. is good, but I prefer Grand Finishes too. And he doesn't sponsor me in any way whatsoever. I pay for the products.
No, you saw it's it, just, you used yeah, it, and it turned out great.
And it gives texture, you know, yeah. which is cool. But then a lot of epoxies. I've just started to use a new brand of epoxy. The other brand, I had an issue with it with my last build, and they sort of pushed the blame onto me, which I was like, okay. You're done.
The only epoxies I've ever done were just garage floors. And I was just like, ugh.
That's becoming a huge thing.
It's now, a right? massive thing now, but yeah. I was doing it years ago and I was like, this is not for yeah. me. I'm not going to do this as a business. I did a couple of them and that was it. That was the extent of it.
I've seen a guy in London. I forget his company's name, but the guy does so many cool patterns and so everything he does is so unique. Like it's just, him again, I get a lot of inspiration from what he does. And he's a young guy. I think he's 26 years old, somewhere around there. But it's just he's got this ability to just create, which is cool. And that's, yeah, like goes into a garage. And it's just a normal garage. And he just goes in there and makes it something super cool and unique, you know. And it doesn't cost an arm and a leg. And, yeah, it's...
It's a shame, though. Sometimes you get woodworkers that are very low key. They yeah. don't want to play the social game. They yeah. just appreciate doing the work. But the problem is, and I've seen this firsthand, they're so skilled. They'll build a business. They'll bring on kids to help them out. They'll start buying more machinery. They'll try to create this empire.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, just the economy falls out. And all of a sudden, people don't want that custom. Like I mentioned, yeah. they'll want the knockoff, which is far cheaper. And it, from afar, looks just as good. And you'll get corporations wanting to buy that product from the knockoff for their front entryway or some hotel or something like that. Yep. And then the business goes under. And then they go and they're almost as quickly as they got in, they get out. And it's like, it's another artist that we lost. That's how I look at it. And it's such a shame to hear that. So whenever I do meet someone that's doing this, I encourage them to kind of push and try to get out there. But I understand that it's a lot of work to do that. Even on my end, it's a lot of work to do this.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just, it's even harder to see them have the opportunity to be in there because they've got such skill. They understand wood. They understand the machinery. They understand what they need to create. And they're coming up with some really amazing ideas.
Yeah.
Like absolutely amazing ideas that you know in a few years will get knocked off.
Yeah, 100%.
Which is a shame. And then it just gets mass produced. And then they can't compete with that. And I'm of the mindset is like you, the wood, like it's just, I would never do this as a veneer. I would have to be a solid piece of ash. That's how it worked out.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because I have a respect for that wood, right?
It's like even the wall that you have in the background there, it's not a knockoff. It's beautiful. And that will be around forever.
It's there. Well, it's glued. You're ripping off all the drywall after that if you want to change
it
that.
It looks sick. Like it's a statement piece. And yes, it doesn't go, like wood does not go with every house there is, or like there's a majority of people that prefer concrete. I love concrete. I love steel.
I love both. I love all materials. I love a combination
of all of it. Man. Yeah. It's just like if you looked at, I built a house on the beach in South Africa. It was my house. And like everything that went in there, I knew nothing about bricklaying. I knew we build very different over there. Like we do double brick walls with a cavity. It's nothing. We don't, but I used everything. And like you can see where I started and where it ended and how the process sort of got better going. But it was cool to sort of figure out, and that's still time and knocking your head to figure out what reacts to what and how it happens. And you need to take those parts in. It's the same with creating woods and stuff like that. You need to sort of figure out on time. It doesn't just happen. Time is the thing. And like you were saying, Nana, with getting lost under the radar, is that you need to constantly be recreating yourself and constantly, especially like with social media, because that's the only tool that I really use as far as marketing, is that you need to be consistent and post and be real. That's like the only...
That's the number one thing I would say, is just be yourself. Don't be afraid of trying to be somebody else, right?
Like in the beginning, you're always trying to please and trying to... But be real. Be, and you'll either connect with somebody or you won't. But there's still that 1%. And 1% in Ontario is huge. It's still 1.5 million people.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
Simple as that, right?
Like it's, and that's the way, I think that's where it sort of clicked in my head, is that there's always going to be someone that likes what you do. It doesn't need to be everybody. And it's good that it's not everybody.
We're older. Because
it's not those people that
you want. We don't need that validation from everybody, exactly. Right? If you get one person just saying, listen, keep it up, simple as that, right? Like what you're doing. Yeah. I'm sure that you're getting approached now by some younger and asking you questions, right?
Yeah, no, and it's like I put out stuff on my social media all the time about positivity. And like you put these things out there not knowing, like, and then you get messages of people saying like, you're such an inspiration. And these are days when you're feeling down. And like, I look at what I produce and I don't feel like it's got such a big impact. But then you get a random text message from a 20-year-old that's saying,
it does.
Listen, this is fantastic. And that gives you so much motivation to sort of continue grinding and like it's not going unseen, you know? And that one person out of thousands of comments is the one that sticks out makes you feel good.
That's the part of the reason why I do this. There's been days where I've done this show and you're just grinding and I'm like, I'm tired and I just like, and then all of a sudden you'll get somebody just sending you a message going, I appreciate you doing the show.
Yeah.
And it was like, then that would just drive you even more, right?
Yeah.
I started the show just thinking if one person can hear it, like listen to the show.
Yeah, look at it.
And I'm fine. And now, exactly, look at it, which is really fascinating.
Cameras everywhere. Like,
and you're great, but everybody's like, curious about like who's going to come on the show next and all this other stuff. And I've got like a lot of very interesting. That's why I'm always interested in anybody reaching out to me going, listen, I think you should get so-and-so on the show.
Yeah.
And I like building that network of people. That's they very all appreciate special, it, right? So I do like that a lot.
Like before, like I told you before I came here, I was super nervous. And you look at my body language now, I'm chilled, you know?
That's generally what happens, Paul. Everyone's always very nervous at the very beginning, and then they kind of just chill out. And sometimes, most of the time, they're telling me, it's got something to do with you, man. You kind of just put everybody at ease, and you're just like, we're just shooting the shit, talking. That's all we're doing.
It just becomes a part of the day. Huh?
I do want to ask you, because I noticed on your post, what's it called? It's called Biltong?
Biltong, yeah.
What's that all about? I've never had that. I want to try it.
I'll make you a batch.
Well, I would love that. I would totally love that.
We take topside steak, like a nice big piece of meat, and we cut it up. And you need to do it. So when you cut a steak, you always cut it like opposite the grain. This is cutting with the grain.
Yes.
And you put it in a whole bunch of like vinegars and apple ciders, and then you lace it with as many different sort of spices as you want. And that cures the meat. And then you hang it up to dry. So I built like a special box. And you hang it up to dry, and it's like jerky, but it's just, it kicks jerky.
Better,
ass.
Isn't it?
Yeah. It's not processed. Nothing in it is processed. It's a real piece of chunk of meat that you're taking up, and it's just, the flavors are crazy. It's just, a part of the South African sort of
background. Oh, I'd love to. That's what I'm saying. I'm passing by to see the shop, but I'm really coming by for the biltong. Oh. That's what I'm coming by
for. If you ever want to do, this is not a plug, but there's a place that's opened up on, what is it, the 427 and Dundas. It's called Hyperama. And it's a South African store, and they sell biltong, they sell droewors, which is the dry sausage part of it.
Yeah.
It's like, and then you can also buy all the like South African like foods. They have it like a takeaway restaurant, and it's just really good.
427, and where?
It's
not in the Cloverdale Mall,
on the west side of the 427. When you turn off, if you're coming south on Dundas, you turn west on the 420 on Dundas off the 427.
Yeah.
So it's just past, there was big boys with cool toys, like, I mean, to remote control. Yeah, so exactly, it was just past
just
that.
Just past that?
Yeah.
I got to check it out. Yeah, and what's the name of it again?
Hyperama.
Hyperama.
Yeah.
I got to check it out, yeah.
No, it's great. It's fantastic. Like, you'll go in there and spend, it doesn't matter.
I had somebody reach out to me recently. He was like, listen, I'm new to the country. I'm starting a business, a printing business. And I forgot his name. I apologize for getting his name. But he was sending me a message and then all of a sudden we got talking for a little bit and I was like, listen, man, I'll do a plug. It doesn't matter. I'll share. I'll let everybody know that you do this printing stuff. And then he's been very nice and going, listen, I'll make you a t-shirt, man. I'll give me your logo. And then he's like, can I make you food? You know, I'm Afghani and this is what we do. And I was like, dude, I love your food, man. I'll like it, whatever. And he goes, any dietary? And I was like, I'm 52, man. There's no dietary. I just want good food. Simple as that. And if it's homemade, all the better. Yeah. Simple as that, right?
Yeah.
But I just love that I don't know who this person is, but he reached out because he knows somebody that came to his house to do work that was on the show. And then he saw the guy and he's like, you look familiar. And then he's like, yeah, I saw you on the show. And then he goes, you should reach out. I want to talk to Manny. I was going to reach out. He's approachable. And I'm like, who said I wasn't? Yeah, I don't understand why. It's like some people are a little nervous about approaching me because they're thinking that you can't get a hold of me. I'm like, no, everybody can get a hold of me.
But that's because of what we go through in Toronto. Everybody's unapproachable. It's the whole thing. We've forgotten how to approach people.
Just say hello, man. Simple as that, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
But I like meeting people like that from all parts of the world. And everyone's always got interesting stories. And
that's the gem about Toronto, because everybody's from everywhere.
Yeah.
Like the opportunities, to really... Like Toronto can and will become a gem again, I think. It's just right now it's in that spot of transition.
I think about a year and a half from now.
Yeah. At least, minimum. Oh, yeah. Let's count it down.
Well, I think there's a countdown going on. I definitely think there's a countdown going on. What else you want me? What's your favorite wood? I'm just curious.
So, like, if you look at the color of my truck, it's orange.
Yeah.
So that's Padauk. It's like a very good, and the reason why, firstly, I love the color. The smell that you get from it when you cut it.
What's it smell like?
It's like, oh man, it's very difficult. It's almost got like a little bit of a sort of cinnamony sort of smell to it. It's not quite, it's such a unique smell, but it's one of the woods that have, it's there. And the thing too is when you plane it and when you... Your entire shop's going to be orange afterwards, so it's an annoying wood. So it's another reason why I dig it, but it's just...
You're probably blowing your nose in it.
Oh, man, it's just... Yeah. It's a mess. Yeah. But that's the favorite wood. Yeah.
Where's it from?
Africa.
Well, Purple Heart is from Africa as well, too.
Yeah, well, the Purple Heart's South America, too, but also in Africa.
Okay, yeah.
And then the next favorite as far as, like, detail goes is zebra wood, because the veins are just... Beautiful.
And that's,
stunning. It's art in its own thing. And then, like, I really love Padauk. I love Wenge, which is a good, like, if you're making things to do accents, like, Wenge is dark. And it just, it sort of brings out if you're trying to do different patterns and stuff like that. Yeah.
That's where you start getting into the whole hand carving, kind of trying to get pieces in there. The Japanese style kind of things. Exactly. And I was like, I still try to wrap my head around how they...
I would love to go spend a few months with some proper Japanese artist and just, learn.
I'm pretty sure they're not using Festool.
No. Like, you go there, they've got structures standing there that are like 2,000-3,000 years old and no nails, no glues, just all pressure fitted. And like, how do you see that? Like, that's the thing. Like, how do you see that if you cut it like that?
That's a whole other world. We've had Stereonymous on the show talking about it as well too, and just that whole shaping, carving, and starting on it as a two-dimensional, as a paper line drawing.
And it's just, I can't see it. I've tried.
It's hard.
And it's time, and it's hard knocks again. That's it. Yeah.
I guess it's almost the equivalent to your first time trying to cut a miter for a crown molding.
Yeah, exactly.
Trying to understand that there's no true 45, 90 degree corner.
Yeah.
And then you're trying to figure out how to make that perfect match there. But then you figure it out eventually.
Yeah. But that the 45s, that's only true in Canada. If you go to South Africa, we have 45 degree angles.
You guys are you coping there? No, you're probably coping more.
We do, everything's concrete and brick.
That's what it is.
Everything's concrete and brick and floated. And
the roofs are clay, no?
Yeah, we have terracotta tiles.
Yeah.
So it's just like I did a wall, like a very beautiful piece for a lady in Oakville, like down the road. And she has a penthouse in a nice building. And I went to put this wall piece on, and it was 2 inches out from the bottom to the top that the wall was leaning like this. And I couldn't believe it. It was like, what is going
on? How off was it off plumb?
It like was 2 inches.
2 inches, that 2 much?
2 inches from the top. From the bottom, from the wall, or from the floor to the top of the ceiling.
Wow.
And the wall piece that I made was like, it was going to be a 45 degree fit. And it was the first time I've ever installed something into a home tea. So I had to quickly figure out how I was going to hide. And but then again, it's about being creative, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How big was the piece?
Oh, it was 16 foot tall by 10 and a half foot wide. Wow. All made out of 4.5 inch ash. It was a very heavy, serious piece out of a single car garage.
What did you do? 16. Like, what was it, squares or was it?
It was all like it was a bookshelf piece.
Oh, okay.
But it was all like really just thick heavy ash and just heavy. And
yeah.
Like, oh, it was a thing.
She could put as many books or whatever she wanted on it. Can, it's never going to deflect.
No. It's stronger than the building it's built in.
Stronger than the wall is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But that's the beauty of woodworking too. The people that you get to meet.
Yeah. Yeah,
and what they want to invent, what they envision.
Yeah,
right.
Back to the creative. It's, but the same with you with building houses. It was the same thing. You're meeting different people, different ideas.
But there's a lot of cookie cuttering kind of like you get people like just the always
subdivisions.
Yeah, they always want to go the safe route, the what I call the for sale route.
Yeah,
right. Because they're not sure in 5 years will we sell this, and we want to make sure that it's easy to sell. We don't want anything extreme. Yeah. I'm not saying extreme. I'm just saying creativity.
I love being different. That's the biggest thing with what I like. My house idea one day is it's not going to happen this year or next year, but I'm going to be building a place up north, and it's just I want to do counter levers and all sorts of bit with containers and cut them open and then add glass. And the more funky I think it is, because you live in the building every day of your life, it needs to be. Like, if you go to my house now, it was built 80 years ago. It's exactly the same. And it just, like, I get the process of it, but it's that whole structuring you to go to work from 9 to 5, come back home. That's what those houses are for, instead of living life. And what I found here is that life starts living us. We trade our time for money, and that's, it's sad. It's what it is. And I'm trying to get to a stage where I teach my kids that it's not what it needs to be. And I think that comes through with the stuff I build. And,
I like that you said that. Life starts living us.
Yeah, it does.
Because it's true.
Yeah, you get lost in it. You get lost. And that's where my shop took me out of that. Like, took me out of that headspace of this is, you need to provide. I'm a man, and I'm not saying women don't provide. There are a lot of women that do provide, mm-hmm. but... As a man growing up in South Africa, we are taught that you're a provider and that's the end of it. And you have to do what you have to do. And being an immigrant coming here, the exchange rate was awful. So I had to come here with minimal amount of funds and build my legacy. And it's getting there. It's getting there.
Still getting there, which good.
Compared to when I first got here, compared to what I have now, it's like, yeah, they're things, but there are things that we need to survive. And I wish everything didn't have to come down to money, and I wish I could give everything that I made away for free, but that's not the world we live in.
Well, maybe one day, but at that point, until then.
Yeah, it's still...
You ever think about, Paul, that what if you never started woodworking? How things would have been?
Well, depression was big.
Yeah.
Depression was huge.
Yeah.
And you'd never admit it. You never do, and... Like, depression gets to us. Like, all of a sudden, you think, oh, shame, he's depressed. But you never think of yourself as being depressed. But then you take a look in the mirror, and there is depression. It's a big thing, and it's...
Everything you're seeing in other people, you're seeing in yourself.
And again, as men, we're not allowed to admit it.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I know, totally.
It's just... If I never got into this, I would be working a good job, you know, making fair money, but there's never, like, with coffee trucking, it is what it is. This is, you got to work from this time to that time, and you make your money. You hustle like hell. You can do money.
Yeah.
But that's it. Where with doing the woodwork shop and being using my hands, is the sky is the limit. I am my only limitation to it. And that's where I see my business as far as woodworking goes in a few years. I still don't know, but I'm excited to go into my shop every day, you know. And I've been doing it for, 3 years, which is not a long time, but I still, like, if I'm not with my family, I'm either working or I'm in my shop. That's what it is. And yeah. I don't dislike opening up my garage door and going and thinking, oh, damn, I have to sand this. This sucks. You know, there's none of that. It's not a job, which is, yeah.
That's why it's good that you've found it. And
yeah.
And it's actually,
I wish everybody else can.
Yeah, that's
just their niche, what they do.
I totally love to believe, and I honestly do. There's kids right now that are trying to figure out new ways of doing something with wood. Yeah. I think a lot of what has happened in the last 10 years and how this manufacturing has taken over a lot of this stuff, I think there's kids that are kind of going back to the old school days and they're doing stuff with wood. I mean, and I contributed to... I still once a week go to Rotate This on Ossington to buy one vinyl record.
That's cool.
And they're a busy shop.
Yeah.
And so vinyl is still the big thing here.
Yeah. And I love vinyl.
I love vinyl.
Yeah, yeah.
I absolutely love vinyl, right? And I don't care about the cracks, the pops. I don't care about that. That's that part of... Yeah, that's the vinyl. So I can't help but think that there's a kid right now, teens, 20s or something... Yeah, yeah. That is looking at a piece of wood and thinking about building something that is redefining what other people have already built with it.
Yeah.
That's happening. That must be happening.
Like if you look, I prefer a piece that has a flaw in it.
Yes. Know,
that has something to
tell. Imperfection is what gives it the character.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah.
Like even my wife, we were talking the other day because she does a lot of mental, she worked for KMH for a long time.
Yeah, you were mentioning off mic.
And we spent a lot of time in Uganda, and I would love to go there as an outreach and teach people how to work with epoxy, how to do things like that, that the rest of the world will see it and just appreciate. Like if you go to Africa is a very special continent. It's like it's vast, and every single country is different to the next one, and everybody has their thing. And like you go to Zimbabwe, everybody's carving. Everybody carves out of rock and like wood, and they do incredible things. You go to Zambia, everybody's building things out of old rubber and tires and just crazy stuff. And then you go to Uganda and everybody's like subsistence farmers and they've done terraces for years.
Yeah.
But like countries like that have had such a hardcore history and such an aggressive history. And people there, like we get so spoiled over here, you know, we wake up, we don't lock the doors to our house. Well, now we're going to have to start again. But like when I got here, I watched CP24 and people were celebrating kids' birthdays on news broadcasts. Like it's just, the world here was so good when I first got here, you know. It was like everybody's chilled, everybody, and then you go to places like this. But keeping that in note is my kids only got to learn their neighbors and learn who they were during COVID.
Because they saw them every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was part and parcel of what it was. Before that, I get very sidetracked, don't I?
No. You get on right track.
Yeah.
No, because it's a reflection of what's going on.
Yeah.
And I want people to know that are listening, find your and follow your passion and do things, but you just never know what, like...
You never know.
You never know tomorrow who you're going to meet. That's the funny thing about it. So if you want to... what do they say? They always say to take a different route of a direction of where you're going to head to for your daily commute.
Yeah.
Always choose a different route because you just don't know where that route is going to take you sometimes, right? You never know.
Yeah, because you get caught up in your routine.
That's the one thing that you got to stop doing. And I think that's what it goes back to woodworking and construction. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
A lot of people from the outside may look at it as routine, but it's not routine. No. It's always a challenge, and it's always custom. It's always something new.
Always something.
Yeah.
It's always something that sparks a little bit of imagination. Or even if you're cutting the wood at the same sort of thing, there's always something that's different. There's, like, I love table saws. I love them. And
until they kick back?
Oh, yeah. Like, if you look over there.
Yeah, we all have them. I know.
Like, that was from grinding and doing my first carving. I got, like, 17 stitches, and the doctor was like, what are you doing? But it's there as a reminder, you know, it's my first woodworking tattoo.
Let the tools do the work, yeah. I know, but sometimes we want to just push, I know.
Repetitiveness, exactly.
Yeah, no, and I know, it, like, the tools do amazing things, it's great.
Yeah.
But yeah, you got to be a little cautious as well.
Mm. No, for sure. And especially, like, my thing as far as kids are concerned and about doing trades and... Like, yes, there's lots of lawyers in the world, and yes, they make money, but everybody takes the blue-collar person as the blue-collar. But you look on job sites, people that aren't, that don't have addictions or things, because there's a lot of people that have addictions on the job sites.
Yeah.
But people that have got their stuff together, actually, their life, the way they live is better than, like, I look at, for example, like, people that I know that work Bay Street. Their life, yes, they have flashy cars, they have big houses, but the stress levels they live in and all that. But the blue-collar people, they go to work, they make really good money, but they have good lifestyles. So, you know, it's like...
I'd like to say that the Bay Street players, their filters are the suits.
Yeah.
And then construction, which I think is, I'm seeing a slight shift now, the filters are still on social media. Everybody on construction, blue-collar, is still hiding behind some filters on social media. And I think there's going to be a little bit of a flip now. I think more and more blue collars are going to start showing true colors.
What
it really is all about.
Yeah.
But I think that a lot of people that, and there are a lot of lawyers that are addicted on things as well, right?
Not just
blue collar or any. But I think that those high-priced suits and the wine and dining and always going to the bar and networking and trying to do clients and sales and all this other stuff. There's different forms of filters that you're masking certain things, but in the end, are you really happy? We don't know.
We don't know.
But I definitely would like to think that a lot of blue collar that are not attached to vices that have seen the value of their skill set.
Exactly. That's
are happy. The value, they're providing for their family. They're providing.
And they're doing a brilliant job.
Yeah.
And they're building a legacy. And they, like, you as a Bay Street guy, your legacy is timed because there's going to be some new guy that comes in that can do your job a little better than you. And then the heads to be will just get rid of you. Whereas as far as blue collar is, or what I've seen, so I've worked the coffee trucks, and I see a lot of people. I get to see all the crews. I don't just see one crew doing one thing.
No, you see everybody.
I see everybody, and you can see that there's passion, there's creativity. Even though they need to slam up these homes and get it done, they are still so proud of what they are doing and how they've accomplished it. And every day they are also, like, there's things that happen on job sites that are crazy, but they are overcoming these issues, and generally by themselves without going to the powers to be. And I think
deep down you see that there's content in their look, right? Like they so, and it doesn't matter if it's like the dead of winter.
Yeah.
And they're all layered up.
Yeah, yeah. They're still out there.
They still have that. Yeah, yeah. They still have that fulfillment look on their face where they're achieving, okay, this floor we took care of, next floor.
And they're genuine. Yeah. There's no, oh, you're such a nice guy. And then behind your back is like, that's such a prick.
No, you know? Tradespeople will just tell you're a prick.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we'll go, let's go get a beer.
Yeah.
Simple as that, right?
No, it's cool. And I see the same thing in the woodwork industry. It's the same thing.
Even better, I have yet to meet a woodworker who's a dick. You know what I mean? Who just doesn't want to share the secrets or something like that.
There's one or two of them I've bumped into.
I'm sure you guys probably know, but I haven't seen them yet, right?
There's one or two of them that I've bumped into that will hold it to the grave, but persistence pays off. Like the one or two that I found initially that weren't very forgiving is just persistent, being that annoying schmuck that comes to your door every day and just, no need help with this, you know? And if you carry it, the biggest thing is asking. Like, that's the biggest thing. If you don't know something, ask and figure it out. And
everybody, including that person you're asking, at one point, ask another so they can learn.
Yeah.
You were not born with all the lessons, man.
Yeah, that's it.
Simple as that.
Yeah.
And you can't die with all the lessons either. You should be sharing them as you're getting on the way out.
But that's not what we taught anymore. You taught to sort of keep things down, close it in, keep it in your little network.
I always did that from day one of construction. I do that with this show. The whole point of this and the whole point of my days on construction sites was I have this knowledge. I have this.
Yeah.
Take it, run with it and use it, improve it.
And it's empowering. It makes things so much easier.
Like, yeah.
Even like if you go on my social, I don't know a hell of a lot, but the stuff I do know, I share with every day. Like I post every single day about what I'm doing. And it's my social media is not about all the pretty glossy, what I show every mistake that happens. Yeah. It's rather learn while I'm learning. That's the way it's supposed to be. And I think that's what we can do as humans, as far as like being compassionate for one another, as to just share and be. Is the biggest thing.
I like to think that with woodworkers, like your projects are paintings and you guys are artists.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how I look at it. And I think a lot of people that approach you to do a piece is no different than commissioning an artist to do something. Exactly. And they want to know more about the artist and where you come from, because then that piece will be in their home. They will have some function, and there's a connection, and there's a story behind this whole piece.
Yeah.
And they will share that story, and that will continue on from there.
Yeah, that's exactly the way it goes, yeah. That's good foresight.
I mean, there's value in that. I honestly believe people buy into the person, not necessarily with the skill that you're providing for them, but they first buy into the person. So just because
the reality is, you can go to IKEA and buy anything that functions well. You know,
we've all done that,
and
it falls apart in a few years.
Yeah. But it still works its purpose.
It
or you
does.
Can come to somebody like me and, or like, any other guy that has a gift in its own. And
someone should start like an IKEA for woodworkers. They're like genuine wood pieces out there,
can
right?
Can you imagine just pumping them out? Poor guys. You have to start a sweatshop in Canada.
No, there's only one left. What about the as-is section? No, there's no as-is section. It's just this is what it is. And those zeros behind there,
is. They're going to be doing now, which is pretty cool. Like IKEA with the as-is section, they have said... Like, my wife went there the other day. So there's no more taxes on the as-is, because their thing is, says, the person that brought that back already paid tax. So there is, like, what you see at IKEA as the as-is section.
That's the price? Section,
that's the price, end of story.
So you're saving a little bit of money.
Yeah. But it's the way of, like, showing the middle finger, you know? IKEA's like...
Then you flip it the other side, and currently right now in Canada, if you... make $100, you actually only make 40.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's like even putting gas in the other day. Like,
oh, it's just brutal.
Oh, man. It's
brutal.
Like diesel almost went, gas almost went exactly the same price as diesel. And it's like.
That's done by design because so many people converted to diesel. But I can only assume with the woods, they probably skyrocketed.
Everything. Like you look, even with the ash. Ash at one point was very cheap. It's a beautiful wood.
Yeah.
But now its price has gone up so much.
Baseball bats.
Everything.
Everything.
It's just, you go to Loblaws and shop, it's stupid. You go to, what's a big one called? The big store that everybody goes to? My wife goes to.
Grocery store?
Yeah, it's like a big grocery store. It's like Macro. No, Macro's in South Africa.
Oh, Metro?
No,
or Fortinos?
No. It's like...
Oh, Costco.
Costco, exactly. Yeah, that was a brain fart.
Costco's insane.
But it's insane. It's just... And then you can imagine having a family of five people and dogs and cats and... Yeah, you need to work in this country. But then you go to Nova Scotia. It's a different world. Like, I went there for the first time this summer and people there are genuinely interested in you. And tomorrow's another day. If it wasn't done today, tomorrow is okay, you know? And I could see myself moving to the East Coast very easily. But again, then you don't make much money there, and that's what you need to do. You know, it's population.
But the homes are cheaper, and just cost of living is cheaper. I mean, you're closer to the water.
Yeah.
The winters are a little harsh.
And then you go to Mexico.
Then you'd have to become a snowbird, which is totally how that's happening. Yeah. And lots of Canadians are doing that, right? A lot of people are going down south now, Florida-wise and stuff. But it's just there's a shift. There's something going on.
There's something going on.
Everyone's still trying to provide. Everyone's trying to do things. And that's it. I think we've covered everything, Paul. I want to just do the 12 questions with you, unless there's anything else you want to mention. Or?
No.
It's been great to meet you. I'm so glad that Gary set this up, right?
Yeah.
He just mentioned it, and then he's like, check it out. Check out the work. And he was like, the work's solid, man.
Thank you, man.
I see it. I'm like, it's solid.
Thank you.
No, so Thanks, man. Everybody can reach out. His email is Paul Lentinello.
Lentinello@gmail.com
647-983-5670. And you can find him on IG. What time, like once a month, you or once a week or once a day you post, right?
I'm on all day. Yeah.
All day, right?
Every day.
At the @the_keen_woodworker. Yeah. 12 questions. What's your favorite? Well, let's do woodworking. What's your favorite woodworking word? What's a woodworking word?
Woodworking word is fix it. It's like fix it.
Least favorite tool?
It would be, it's a shaper. It's a big dish shaper. And it's what gave me the tattoo on my hand.
It's off a grinder?
It's off a grinder. It's got this big aggressive head.
And no guard on it?
It bites hard.
I see a lot of the guys online doing that. Oh, and yeah. I'm just like, scary.
And you think, because initially you get confident with it and you're working with it, and then you get lazy and you start grinding and whoop.
One little slip.
Oh, yeah.
What woodworking sound do you love?
I love the sound of the bandsaw. The bandsaw does that
when it gears
whistle
up,
and it's just, it's beautiful. Yeah.
But that's another one. That's another open blade, man. It's
But you learn. You learn to respect the tools. Everything in a woodwork shop is dangerous, man. There's not one thing inside there that's going to be friendly.
True, huh?
Yeah.
What's your favorite beverage?
So it's a weird one. It's in Uganda. I was traveling for a while, and I came to this lodge. It's called Buani Lake, and they had on their menu, like they said, milkshake, and like they don't have much power there. So I was like so stoked, I'm going to get a milkshake. So I told the guy there, "Oh, can I have a double thick milkshake?" And he looked at me with a worried look on his face. He's like, "Okay, no problem." He brings me back this glass, and it's dark, and he was so excited. So I had a sip, and it was pure cocoa powder with a little bit of milk inside it. And yeah, that was my favorite drink.
It was basically brownie just, batter or
it
something?
It was just cocoa powder, no sweetener, no nothing.
Wow.
It was, yeah.
And it's good?
It was good. It was good for the situation. Yeah.
What turned you on and off about woodworking?
Deadlines turn me off, the deadline, and what turns me on is the creativity. Yeah.
Favorite curse word? You don't have to curse if the kids are going to listen.
No, that's fine. Fuck. You know, it expresses.
It's always the go-to.
Yeah.
Favorite vehicle in the, any mode of transportation?
Freedom-wise, motorcycles. I love motorcycles.
What are we talking? American, Japanese, European?
I'm into adventure bikes. I love
KTMs.
Crosses. Yeah, KTMs. I started with the KLR. I went to KTMs. KLR was the bus. It did a trip from Cape Town all the way up to Ethiopia and came back without one issue. A fantastic machine.
And did you ever see Charlie and Ewan's documentary?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Long way
man.
Around. And long way down. Yeah.
They're amazing stories, man.
Yeah. From guys that didn't know what they were doing. Yeah.
They did a good job.
Yeah, they did great.
I love that documentary.
And you know the funniest thing with them is they approached KTM initially.
I saw that. And KTM and they told them shut to it down. And I'm like, you're shutting down Obi-Wan Kenobi. Oh, yeah. All right. I don't understand this,
man.
Yeah,
it's bizarre.
But then they went with BMW.
Yeah, and BMW's looked after them ever since. And then they also tried that, I think, from South America coming up north with that Buell, that electric.
That was the third one that only Charlie did, that Ewan wasn't a part of it. Yeah, and they did the electric one.
Electric Harley Davidson, yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't as good.
But the idea was good.
It was great.
Yeah.
But it was, I almost liked the long way down a little bit better than the long way around.
You know, the nice thing about the long way around was it's their first one, and it was very... my problem is I've done the long way down many times by myself. So I used to do the overlanding, which I did that route millions of times, you know. So for me, it was more the long way around because it resonated to something I hadn't done.
There was a lot of countries that they were going through, that and the challenges as well, right?
Oh, yeah, proper.
And then he gets into the accident in Calgary. Like the one, he's going around the entire world and he gets into an accident in Calgary.
Yeah.
Some woman in a Civic, I think hit him. And I was like,
it's so cool.
It's a great doc. If you ever get a chance.
Well, that's it. Adventures.
What do you miss from your childhood?
Freedom.
I have to somehow figure out how we could bottle that and have it for adult.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
just like
just spontaneousness, you know, just being able to just do.
Yeah. I think if you create more, if you create something every single day,
yeah,
it gets you closer to being a child.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Right. Or at least the mind thought of it, yeah.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt one day?
So I like tree planting is a very cool sort of like, I look at the guys in BC once the lumber guys have come through.
And they replenish.
And they replenish. Yeah. And it's just the what they see and what they have to deal with. I think it would be a very cool terrain sort of to get into. And I wanted to become a horticulturist when I was young instead of studying law. But my father told me there's no money in that. So you studying law, the family needs a lawyer. And yeah.
Well, the family needs a divorce lawyer.
Yeah, exactly, man. You got a good memory on you, eh? I dig that.
What profession would you not like to do?
Porta potties on the job sites. I think that's going to be like...
That's been expressed several times on that.
I can't imagine people have homes, but they don't know how to use a porta potty on a job site.
Like, oh, they don't care.
No.
They just don't care.
Yeah, yeah.
Last question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
You're not finished. Go back.
Turn around. Paul, absolute pleasure having you on the show, thank man. You, Thanks so much, man. It's been great chatting. And I'll pass by. I want to pass by. We'll coordinate and I'll pass
by. Give me warning so I can...
No, totally. Yeah, totally. I will, man. But I love this. This is great. And thanks again to Gary for setting this up.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing. Thank you, Gary. And it's been great being on the show.
Thank you.
Very relaxing. Not nearly as daunting as what I thought it was going to be. And yeah, hope you have many more of these,
man. Oh, there's plenty more we have to still pull off, right? I got a magic number. I haven't shared it with a single soul.
Don't.
So, no, I won't. I'll share it when it happens, that number, as we get closer to it. But thank you.
Thank you.
We're out of here. Thanks, Angeline.